ओम शांति 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 ओम तत्सत। ओम सहना भवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सह वीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु, मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Okay, let's see. We're on verse 14 of the Dutta Gita. Verse 14. So repeat after me. Sabahya bhyantaro sitvam. Sabahya bhyantaro sitvam. Shiva sarvatra sarvada. Shiva sarvatra sarvada. Itastatak katam brantaha. Itastatak katam brantaha. Pradhavasi pishachavat. Radhavasi Pishachavat. Saha Bahya, Bahya, not aspirate, Bahya, Abhyantaraha, Asi, Twam, Shivaha, Sarvatra, Sarvada. Ittaha, Tattaha, Katam, Bhrantaha, Pradhavasi, Pishachavat. So, Saha, if you say Saha Asi Twam, Twam Asi, you are, Saha Twam Asi, all in the first case, you are Saha, you are that, so that you are he, you are that Brahman. So, Saha Twam Asi, you are that, that one, that Brahman, who is Bahya Abhyantaraha Asi, who is both Bahya, outside, and Antaraha, inside. It's a Dvandva compound. So Tvam, you, Asi, are, Saha, that, is that Brahman. You are he. If I don't even bring in Brahman, Brahman's understood from all of the other verses, but you could just say, Saha Tvam Asi, Tvam Asi, you are Saha, that one, nominative singular, you are he, who is bahya abhyantaraha, who is bahya, outside or exterior, and antaraha, inside, interior. So you are that one who is both external and internal, exterior and interior, inside and outside. So you are both bahya and abhyantaraha. Then tvam asi shivaha, you are Shiva. Shiva is the one who is auspicious, the most auspicious, Shivaha, the one whose nature is a blessing. So you are that Shivaha. Sarvatra, the one, you are that Shiva, who is both inside and outside. You are he, the one who is both inside and outside, who is Shiva, the most auspicious, the one whose nature is a blessing. Sarvatra. Sarvatra and Sarvada are two indeclinables. Sarva means all. So if I put the tra affix on the end of sarva, making it this indeclinable, tra has the sense of location. So sarva tra would be everywhere, right? Tra, location, where? Everywhere. So sarva tra means everywhere. Whereas sarva da, that you have sarva, which means all or every, with this indeclinable da affix, da is in reference to time. So sarvatra, place, sarvada, da, time. So you are everywhere and sarvada at all times. You are everywhere and at all times. So saha bahya abhyantaraha asi tvam shivaha sarvatra sarvada. Ittaha ittaha tattaha katam brantaha pradhavasi pishachavat. At that last word, you see the vat affix, that vat. Vat is used in different ways with totally different meanings. But this vat affix makes the word an indeclinable in the sense, and it means like. So a pishachavat. Pishachavat means like a ghost. The bishachas are the ones who are, when you die, if you don't really move on, if you don't move on to different lokas, but because of your attachment and whatnot, you're kind of hovering around this loka, just kind of above this loka, just hovering here and there, going, itaha tataha means here and there, hither and thither. The translator says, you're going hither and thither, here and there, here and there. So it says, katam. Katam means how, or why, or for what reason. Katam, how is it? How is it that, how are you, oh deluded one, you who, how is it, or why are you brantaha? Why are you deluded? Pradhavasi, running about hither and thither like a pishacha. How is it that you who are that one who is both inside and outside, the most auspicious, being everywhere at all times, how can you who are this Brahman, this one who is Brahman, how are you who are this, how is it that you are deluded, running about deluded hither and thither, just like a pishacha? What has happened? How is it that you who are Brahman, who are everything, everywhere, at all times, with no place internally or externally that you are not, there's no spot, there's no hiding place, there's no spot where you are not, how can this, such a delusion as this happen, that you find yourself like a pishacha, you know, running around hither and thither, you know.
What was that word?
Pishacha. A pishacha is like a ghost.
Oh.
You know, when you think of transmigration, you're moving from, when you drop the body, you move on. Because of your karma. Your karmas, you go to different lokas to exhaust the different karmas. And then you eventually take a birth, or right away, actually, in this loka. But a pishacha, when a person dies, they don't want to move on. They have too many attachments here. And so they're hovering around, you know, moving here and moving there. When within this kind of this hanging on to this creation, they're moving here and moving there and wanting this and wanting that, even though, you know, they've already left this loka. So like a pishacha, you're moving around here, totally deluded. You're looking, wanting this and wanting that, and I want this thing and I need that thing, and this is happening to me and that is happening to me. Now who, what has happened to you to become so deluded? Who do you think you are? You're like a pishacha. Where does this Bronte? Where does this delusion come from? What's happened to you? How is it even possible? How is it possible for the one who is really Shivaha, the most auspicious, and who, therefore, whom there is no place where you are not, and at no time where you are not, where is there any room for the delusion when there's no place where you are not? Wherever you go, even if you go into the delusion, you're already there. Because sarvada sarvatra, there's no place that you're not. So how is this delusion even possible? I'm just reading these few verses that I'm going to do tonight. I'm reading ahead a little bit, but they don't really answer. They don't answer this question exactly. So none of these answer that. They just are kind of telling you how things are and then asking, why are you having a problem? All of these verses, this is how it is. What's your problem? Why are you having a problem with all of this? But here's why we're having a problem. I'm just going to talk about why on earth are we having this problem? Why are we like pishachas running around hither and thither? You know, the fact is this, that it is true that you have no problem. Your being, yourself, the conscious me, the conscious being that you are, you have no problem. You've never had a problem. You never will have a problem. So for you, there's never been a problem. Even when there's nothing but problems for you, there's never been a problem. Those problems are not something which are even experienced by you. The Atma, the self, is non-dual. The conscious being that you are is consciousness. I think this is sometimes where people get confused or get themselves into a little trouble until this is understood. Who you are, your own being, your own self, you right now, whether you have knowledge or not, self-knowledge or you don't have self-knowledge, yourself is ever-present and in language is identified as me. If I say, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, who am I talking about? What is it that is providing this self-experience of being me, this very personal me who exists and is a conscious being? We think that the body-mind-sense organs complex is what is providing this experience of me. I have this experience of myself because I have this body. I have the experience of myself because I have my mind. I am a conscious being. And then I go on, it goes on. I am a conscious being, and what does that mean, I'm a conscious being? Well, I exist with this body, mind, sense, organs. I am here, I exist, and I am a knower. I am the subject, I am the one who knows. As a conscious being, I am the one who knows. And what do I know? Well, I know all of the experiences that come my way through my five sense organs. So I, this conscious being, you know, have this physical body. I exist as this body, mind, sense organs. And because I'm a conscious being, I am a knower. Whereas the chair is known, but it itself is not a knower. I could say the rug is known, but it is not a knower. I am a knower, and you are a knower. That's what we mean by conscious being. I exist, and I am a knower. This is the mistake. This is exactly the mistake. This is the problem. I say, I am a knower from the standpoint of my mind and my sense organs. Then it's true, I have a buddhi. So the conscious me that is really the adhishtana, the consciousness which is the adhishtana, the consciousness which is the adhishtana of the mind, which is ever present as me, is a knower from the standpoint of the mind. But from the standpoint of me, I simply am known as consciousness. I am known because I'm self-evident. I am not doing anything. I am not knowing anything. I am not being anything other than myself. And then if I say I'm not knowing anything, doing anything, being anything, why not? Well, because it's my hands and legs and my body that does things. It's my mind that feels and thinks and has emotions. It's my sense organs that have, you know, all different variety of perceptions. These are the doers, the seers, the thinkers, the emoters. All of these things belong to the body, mind, sense organs, which itself exists within duality and is something that comes into being and goes out of being. Just like everything about me, in fact, in terms of my body, mind, sense organs, the knowership, the doership, seership, all the ones who has the feelings, I am feeling like this. That requires the mind. That requires actually the unconscious material arising up into the conscious mind. Now, we're identifying all of this with me. And so I become all of these things. And when we do the drishya viveka, the see or seeing differentiation, look at what happens to us. In the beginning, the see or seeing differentiation is very simple. And I can just nod my head, oh yeah, that's true. I can say, I, this body, mind, sense organs, I am the subject and the world external to me is the object. But then I realize that I know the external world through my sense organs. And in fact, the body is also objectified as an object through my sense organs. So then I move inward. Now the sense organs become the knower of the body and of the world. And without my sense organs, I wouldn't even recognize I had a body. Remove all your sense organs and there's no world, physical world being experienced by you. And there's also no physical body being experienced. And so they easily then get relegated to objectification, to an object, something that you are aware of. And we go through this process of even then negating the sense organs as me because they're also something that I can know. And so therefore I must be the mind. And then I said, well, the mind and the emotions are known by the buddhi, the different part of the mind, the innermost part of the mind that can objectify all of these emotions and feelings and vritti. So I am the knower, then I am the buddhi. Now, this is how far we go, and everybody's still fine. But when we objectify the buddhi and the intellect, or the innermost mind, the mind that can objectify all of the other types of thoughts is what's called the buddhi. I can objectify and comment on every type of thought, an emotion and a memory or something I'm thinking. I can object the one who is the innermost objectifier is what we call the buddhi. I can even talk about the ahankara, the I notion. And so then that is closest to me. I can't really go any farther than that. I could say, you know, I can talk about my relationships and my feelings and my parents and my upbringing and all of these type of things. But still, I'm the knower of all of that. I can even say that space is known to me, but then I say I'm the knower of space. And so there's this other little step that has to take place in order to understand this knowledge. And that is that what is actually everything that you're saying you're a knower of, all of those things are known, right? Even the buddhi is known. The buddhi that makes the most innermost decisions, that also is known. The ahankara, the I thoughts are known. Space is known. Your relationships are known. Your knowledges are known. Your ignorance is known. And now we have to say, okay, who then is the knower when you have objectified all of the upadis, all of the conditioning adjuncts that act as that kind of wear the costume of being the knower? You've already objectified all of those. Once you objectify the buddhi and the ahankara, then all of these things are known to you. But where's the knower? Right? Because the buddhi is not a knower. The manas is not a knower. The ahankara is not a knower. These things are all known. I mean, ultimately, they're a knower in reference to within samsara, but they themselves are known. And so everything, now what happens is everything that's an upadhi, your body, your mind, your sense organs, all of them become objectified. And then you still say, I am the knower. But all of the instruments of knowledge have been objectified. You say, I am the knower, but actually, now this is the key issue here. Actually, when you get to that point, realizing that everything is known, what does the knower look like? What if space is known? The world is known. The body is known. The sense organs are known. The mind is known. The buddhi is known. The ahankara, the I notion is known. Knowledge and ignorance is known, all objectifiable. Now, what do you look like? The one because of whom all of this is known. The only thing within duality, your mind, the only place your mind has to go to within duality is to the knower. Well, yeah, ultimately, I am the knower. Mm. But what does that knower look like? What does the knower look like? And where is the experience of the knower? This is even more profound. This is all meditative material. Where is the experience of the knower, of the known, of the knower? You don't have an experience of the knower. You have an experience of the known. So now once I say, okay, by me, all of these things are known. And then what is the nature of that knownness? Does the knownness that all of these things enjoy require a knower? Or is the knownness itself the self? Is the knownness itself the self? And we say yes. The knownness itself is the self. The knownness is what we call that self-evident, self-effulgent, self-shining, swaprakasha, swatasiddha. The self itself is the knownness, is the consciousness. The consciousness because of which everything else is illumined. But itself, but itself not doing anything. Nor is it knowing anything. One example we use for this is just the sun. Within duality, the sun is shining, and because the sun is self-evident, self-shining, everything is illumined by it. But the sun isn't doing anything other than just being itself. And from its own what is the sun's experience? The sun's experience is its self-evident sun, self-evident sunlight. That's its experience. Everything else gets illumined by it, but the sun isn't having any such experience. The sun is the light itself because of which other things shine. You can see what I mean. And so in fact, if we think of Advaita or non-duality, we can't have a bunch of knowers. Say the bottom line is I'm a knower and you're a knower and you're a knower. Well, we have a lot of knowers there. That's not non-dual. But the whole Vedanta, with the whole vision of the Upanishads, is that when we get to this bottom line, after everything has been objectified, what is left is knownness itself, consciousness itself. And what experience does consciousness have other than consciousness? What is the experience of me other than me? So just to make clear what I'm saying here, say from the standpoint of your body, mind, sense organs, and the world, you, sitting here listening to this talk, you have a vritti, you have a thought modification. So this vritti, this thought modification, as it arises, it is known. The instant the buddhi or any vritti arises, it is and it is known. So now the question is, now that it has arisen and it is known, is the self that is the knownness, does it have any subject-object relationship with the vritti? Does the self in which the consciousness, the knownness in which the vritti arises, is that consciousness a knower of the vritti from its own standpoint? You would say no. But from the standpoint of the vritti, yes. From the standpoint of the vritti, yes, the vritti is known. And from the standpoint of the vritti, because of the ahankara, I don't say, oh, the vritti is known.
No.
I say, the ahankara says, I am the knower of the vritti. I am the one who is having this experience. But actually, that's not our experience at all. What our experience actually is as the vritti arises, it is known. When it goes away, another vritti comes, that is known, then that is known, then that is known. So the knownness itself is pure. It's not taking on, it's asanga. The knownness is asanga. Asanga means totally unattached. Things are moving through it. Like space, we can say everything's moving through space, but nothing touches space. So space itself isn't affected by everything that moves through it. It's more subtle than everything that moves through it. Here, it's even more subtle than space. As conscious being, everything rises and sets in me, but I simply am the constant being which all of this Maya enjoys as it presents itself. So for me, there is no knowership at all. So now going back to this verse, he says, now from the standpoint of this creation that we're experiencing, sitting here as jivas within the creation, he says, you are that one who is bahya abhyantaraha. You are both inside and outside. Whatever vritti is there, whatever perception that you're having, if it's an external perception or an internal perception, you are there. And you are Shivaha. You are that one who is most auspicious. You are never not there, internally or externally, internally or externally, whatever experience is there, whatever experience you're having, that you are that one that is always there as Shivaha, the one who is most auspicious, who is Sarvatra, everywhere, Siddha, at all times. There is nothing in the creation that fits that. There is nothing in the creation that is both internally and externally as Shivaha, always a blessing, and Sarvatra, everywhere, at all times. The closest you can come to that would be space. But then space is something that you can be away from. So it says, and space we don't consider as that which is Shiva. Shiva is the most auspicious, you know. So you are that one who is ever present, internally and externally, everywhere at all times, and your nature is Shiva. It's not that your nature is sometimes Shiva. When I have a happy vritti, I'm Shiva. When I have a sad or a hurt vritti, I'm dull, asura. I go from Shiva to asura, Shiva to rakshasa. I go from ananda to dukkha, sukha to dukkha, sukha to dukkha. That would be a busy self. Imagine if that's the nature of your being. Very busy self. A self that continually comes and goes is remade every moment. It's a momentary self. Swamiji would always joke about the Kshanika Vijnanavadins as that, what did he say?
Flickering
consciousness. Poof, 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 poof. You know, this is not that. Your being is not flickering. You're the one who's ever present. But the question here is, if you're ever present, if you are the one who is here, your nature is Shiva. It's protected. Shiva means it's the most auspicious. You're not a knower. You are the known that is ever present in every experience. That's a good meditation. You are the knownness. You are the consciousness that is ever present, no matter what is going on within Maya, no matter what the vritti is. You are the consciousness, the knownness that is ever present. Now that requires a viveka, a differentiating. It requires a differentiating of the knownness, the consciousness, from every objectification, every type of vritti. Instead of labeling it a knower, recognize yourself as the one who is ever present as self-evident knownness, as self-evident me, as self-evident consciousness, not conscious of anything. Self-evident consciousness doesn't mean conscious of something. Here I'm reconnecting. Hang on a second. I've lost my connection. Oops. Are we back on, everybody? Let me know if you can hear me. We just lost our connection. Let's see here. Okay, good. I don't know why. I think it's probably on my side. There was a kind of a blackout. Okay. So to kind of answer, let me turn some of these off. Everybody needs to mute their audio. Okay, I think they're all muted now. Good. Let me just wrap this particular verse up by saying something, just to reiterate what the verse is saying and what the problem is. It says, how, when you are all pervasive and just self-evident consciousness, how can you be wandering around, running around like a pishacha, like a ghost running hither and thither everywhere? How is that possible? It's not possible for you. You've never run around anywhere. You've never moved. You're always just self-evident conscious being. You're not a knower. You're me. You're the very conscious. It's your very self experience is changeless. But you are not a knower. The knowership comes along with Maya. Right, the knowership requires an upadhi. So you have to think of it like this. Think of your body, mind, sense organs as coming with the whole creation, as part and parcel of Ishvara. But you're the wave, not the ocean. Right? You're a part of the ocean. You're a part of Ishvara. You're not the whole. So you're only experiencing this world through your sense organs and through your mind. And your mind, being sattva, reflects consciousness as though utilizes manifest consciousness. So from the standpoint of your mind and your sense organs, you take yourself to be the conscious being. In other words, the conscious being, who you are, Brahman, yourself, doesn't take itself to be anything. It simply is, I am who I am. That's it. This, all of these words and all of these ideas belong to Maya. They belong to the mind and the sense organs and the body and to the universe, to this universe of duality. So it is your mind that has the mistake. It's the mind, you know, who identifies me with the upadis, the body, mind, sense organs, and experiences the world. And so having really through no fault of my own, I take myself to be this body, mind, sense organs. Who takes yourself to be that? You don't take yourself to be anything. You're always exactly the same as Brahman, as conscious being, as me. So it's your mind that takes yourself, you know, to be limited, or the mind says, I am the mind, or the mind says, I am this body, mind, sense organs complex. All the while, you're me, remaining the me, remaining exactly the same. It's totally ineffective. Doesn't hear you. Doesn't even hear you. You just simply are. And you are Shivam. Now, why does he bother to say you are Shiva? Because there's nothing more dear or more sacred or more holy than that ever-present presence of myself. And that presence of myself shines in this upadhi. That's why this upadhi is, this body, mind, sense organs is, is like a temple. In India, it's viewed as a temple. We put the tilak on it, the chandan and the sandal paste. You know, when you take a bath, you're doing an abhishekam, you know, to the Lord, to Brahman, to that conscious being that, from the standpoint of this body, fills this particular body. But it is Shiva. It's your being is sacred. It's never touched or hurt in any way, and it is the most dear in the sense that it is everything that you seek in life. It's the love, the wholeness, the well-being, that all the, like when your mind gets a chance to say, all is well with me. You know, all is well with me. This is how I should always be. It's just the mind has stepped out of the way for a while. And what is dominant in your mind is the Shiva, that auspiciousness of your being. So there's nothing more sacred than yourself. But yourself, and you say, oh yeah, but it's not a knower. I have to know it. For it to be sacred, I have to be to know it. No, you don't have to know it for you to be it. You already are it as the conscious being. Now, sometimes Swamiji says, he says, you know, do you want to be sugar or do you have to taste sugar? He says, you are sugar. You are Shiva. You are that most auspicious that everybody wants to taste. You are that most auspicious that everyone seeks. So do you want to be the seeker of the most auspicious, or do you want to be the most auspicious? So say, well, I want to be a seeker of the most auspicious because I want to experience that which is most auspicious. But then you'd experience it and not be it. Say, I want to experience something. Well, maybe I want to experience the beautiful view. But the beautiful view that I'm experiencing, I want it that somehow to translate into the auspicious sanctity of that expression of Ishvara. But I want the direct immediate feeling of auspiciousness, not that I want to look at it from a distance. You know, I want to be that, and I am that. That's what needs to be discovered, and then my mind kind of pranams down to the auspiciousness that is ever present, and which is the same in all beings, because not an object to be perceived. It's not an object within duality. So if I'm not an object within duality, then all duality, but I am, then all duality must exist within me. So that's another place we have to go. Well, let me see this. Let's go to the next verse. Repeat after me. Verse 15. Samyogascha vyogascha vartate. Samyogascha vyogascha vartate nachate name. Vartate nachame te name. Natvam naham jagannedam. Natvam naham jagannedam. Sarvam atmaiva kevalam. Sarvam atmaiva kevalam. Samyogaha cha vyogaha cha vartate nachate name. Natvam na aham jagat na idam sarvam atma eva kevalam. Working on the same theme in a sense, he says samyogaha samyogaha viyogaha cha. He says samyoga and cha means and. Samyogaha cha viyogaha cha, one, nominative singular. So samyogaha cha viyogaha cha vartate na jate name. It says there is no samyoga or viyoga for you or for me. Samyoga means union, uniting with something. Viyoga means separation. So neither for you or for me is there any such thing as union samyoga or of separation. Na tvam na aham jagan na idam sarvam atma eva kevalam. Na tvam, there is no you. Na aham, there is no me. Jagat na idam, there is no universe. Sarvam atma eva kevalam, there is indeed only the self. He says, everything, sarva means all or everything. All atma eva is indeed the atma alone, solely the self. All is verily the self alone. So for you, there is no samyoga, there's no union or acquisition, and there's no viyoga. For you, there's no union or viyoga, and for me, nor is there for me. In fact, there is no you, there is no me, there is no jagat, there is no universe jagat. Everything indeed is the atma, is the self alone.
Wow.
So we understand that where is you or me or the universe, there's only one non-dual self. So what is it, the good drishtanta for this? There's the many, like the wave, ocean, the clay pot. But one that Swamiji uses that I've liked is, and I've used myself, having picked it up from him. Imagine a sculptor who has sculpted out of a big rectangular block of clay. He's sculpted a city scene. And in the city scene, there are buildings and bullock carts and roadways and people walking. And there's a sky with a sun and clouds. Everything very finely, meticulously sculpted into this big block of clay. The grass, the blades of grass and flowers along the walkway. It's very, very meticulous. And so when you look at it, you get lost in the activity that has been sculpted into this block of clay. But as we look at it, we realize that actually I am the clay and you're the clay and all the objects are the clay. And in fact, the whole block, the whole scene is nothing but clay. And there is no yoga or viyoga because there's only clay. There's only clay there. So you can't unite with the clay, and you can't separate yourself from the clay, right? And you can't unite with me or separate yourself from me as a jiva, because there's only one clay there. There's not two of us. There's never two of us. And so that's so then who is there in this creation? Only me. But now if I say that, who am I referring to? So all of this, if this entire creation is only me, you are me, you know, I am me, you are me, the whole universe is me. And in fact, there is no me and there is no you and there is no universe. There is only one Atma, there is only one clay. Mm-hmm. So what kind of a realization is this? What does this mean? That there's no sukha or dukkha even. That's all maya. The sukha and dukkha, the loss and the gain, is all maya. And what does it mean to say, that something is all maya? When you say it's all maya, yama iti maya, that which is not, that is maya. That which is not. That's what we mean by mitya. We're experiencing this intricate universe, just like the intricate carving in the block of the, in the clay block by the sculptor. Very intricate, very involved, some, you know, very, very three-dimensional, so involved, so colorful, so real. But what is the reality that you're experiencing really? We're experiencing this. But what is it actually here? We're experiencing all the color, all of the nama rupa, but what are we actually experiencing is only clay. And that's a very, very beautiful, very fine viveka. In fact, it's a good meditation to walk around, like walk out in nature, especially, or anywhere, it doesn't matter. But because I'm in nature right now, I like to think of it like that. If I take a walk down to the river or take the dogs to the river, there's so much going on, right? And at the same time, there is nothing going on. That's why just to realize what is actually here, the self experience, the Shiva that is here all of the time. Nothing's ever happening to it. Nothing is ever touching it. Everything is, you know, at a million miles an hour, actually, coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. Nothing is changing. Nothing is happening.
Is that confusing?
No. It's just not seen. You know, it's not seen. Now, if you don't understand and you have that experience, then it's magical and bewildering.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, I always use the example, like when you wake up from a dream. And this intricate, beautifully crafted dream, this world that is taking place, goes away in the, you know, in a split second, and what has happened? You realize nothing has happened, and yet this intricate universe has just disappeared, but there's been no loss because what is actually here hasn't been touched at all. Mm-hmm. And so that's a bewildering, fantastical type of experience, and there's always also something very reassuring in it. Because the whole universe can go away, and your whole dream universe can go away, and at the same time you have the experience that nothing has happened, that what is still there. Mm-hmm. It was there during the dream experience, it's there after the dream experience. You're safe. Nothing happens. It really doesn't make any difference at all. Nothing has really happened. And as your mind retracts itself and pulls back from this maya, from this ajnana, this ignorance that superimposes my being onto the nama rupas, the names and forms themselves, then as my mind understands more and more and pulls back, you know, to myself, then the Shiva of my own being, the nature of my own being is more dominant in the mind. Because it's been differentiated. And so maya becomes more and more like maya. Becomes like the show of maya. Because my mind has, because of the ignorance continuing to thin out, becomes more and more, myself becomes more and more dominant in the mind. Because I just, not that it hasn't always been dominant, it's just my mind hasn't recognized. So I become more and more dominant to the mind, whose nature I have always been.
Mm.
It's like some same people in the clay carving, waking up to the fact that everything's clay. They become enlightened. They see everything is only clay.
Mm.
But it's never not been that. That's why the Buddha said this quote that I like of his. When a disciple had become enlightened, he said, the disciple said, nothing happens. And Buddha said, yes, perfect. What happens? Just think of the clay, you know, the clay fresco, when the student or the person in the clay recognizes, wow, this is only clay. He saw the experience of the dream, but you see, it's of being clay. He still has the experience of body, mind, sense organs, and all of this duality. But he sees very clearly this is all only clay. That's because the mind is in such a disposition to recognize that. It's a mumukshu mind. Because the samsari mind doesn't care if it's clay or whatever, as I want that, or and I want that thing, and I want that thing. I don't care if it's clay. I don't care what it is. It doesn't matter to me, this philosophy. I don't care. I want these things. But a mumukshu isn't like that. I don't want all of these things because they don't really have anything lasting to offer me. I want to be whole and complete. I want some sort of resolution, some meaning, some purpose. I want to know who I am. You know, it's a whole different pursuit. It's considered to be a lot of punya to even have those kind of questions. Om Tat Sat. Let's say a prayer. Swasti prajabhya paripalintam nyayena margena mahim mahishah ko brahmane pyashubhamastu nityam loka samhasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobharahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niratmayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritangamaya Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om. Om Tat Sat. I've read, yeah, so the mind becomes more aware of what has always been. So that's right. That's exactly it. It recognizes what has always been there. That's why nothing has really happened. It's always been like this. But then you suffered so much from not knowing. But when you know, you realize it's always been like this.
Knowing something is an experience, and knownness is an experience that doesn't come and go. Is there, between the two experiences, is there a difference in knowership and knownness? Can you sense a distinction?
I think that the idea of a knower is just made up. It's a made hypothetical because you don't know how to categorize yourself. But when you analyze your experience, mm-hmm. there's only known. Mm-hmm. Everything is known. Mm-hmm. And then we conceptualize a knower. We just call what is known, we call the knownness. We separate, in a sense, the knownness from the object known and call the knownness the knower and the object known the known.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're only making that up. There is no such experience. The experience is that it is known. Even the ahankar is known.
Yeah.
There's no knower. There's just me. Everything is an expression just of consciousness.
Well, the ahankara can be known, but it seems that knowership seems to be very real, even though it isn't, and you can kind
of... Well, because the knownness is real. It's just the mind divides that up. It divides the knownness up into three, knower, knowing, and known. Right? That's what's happening. You're dividing one experience up into three parts, knower, knowing, and known. When actually there's just the knownness plus whatever's in the vritti. But you don't want to take yourself to be the object.
No.
You only want to take yourself to be the subject, so you have a special name for that.
Are you guys glad to be back? No parking?
Yeah, the thing is here, Fred, you say like, when I take myself to be the mind, that brings along the ahankara, which seems to be the knower. Well, the ahankara is that which identifies consciousness with whatever. And so say I'm looking through my eyes at... this mountain scene that I'm seeing. So then I'm the seer of the mountain. Otherwise, what am I going to say? I'm the mountain. I'm not the mountain. I'm the seer of the mountain. But actually, then I'm identifying the known mountain as being the known, and the eyes, which are also known. The known eyes as being the knower. So the known eyes get to be the knower because they're an instrument, and the known mountain gets to be the known. But the mountain is known, the eyes are known, the mind is known. There is nothing but known, but then I identify from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs with a given upadhi, you know. Like I identify with the eyes, okay, I'm the knower. But actually the eyes are known. There's no none of the knower is known and the known is known.
And even that identity is known.
What identity?
That I am
the Brahman.
Knower of the eyes.
Yeah, that's also known.
Yeah.
Even I am Brahman, the vritti, I am Brahman. That also is known. Except the good thing is with I am Brahman, is that I'm recognizing, you know, the nature of myself.
Mm. Mm.
The mind is recognizing and awake to the nature of myself. But that's good when you say, Fred, when you say, when I look very closely, I see no knower. Right, and the more closely you look, the more you don't see it. You just see known. Everything is known. The self is known. The vrittis are known. All experiences are known. Because all experiences have Atma consciousness as their adhishtana. And that adhishtana is knownness, is self-evident knownness. There's nothing away from it.
Mm.
So the subject is known and the object is known. The seer is known, the seen is known. And then to recognize the knownness, meditate on the knownness itself. Consciousness itself is Shiva. Shiva means that which is most auspicious.
Most dear.
Most dear. It's priyam, most dear, most auspicious. There's nothing most sacred.
when you notice the difference between known and knowership, that's almost using Viveka in connection to Satyamitya. You almost, or you're doing this.
Well, in the end, everything becomes mitya. Yeah. The knower resolves into the known. The knower known only goes so far. The knower known Viveka.
Mm.
But what happens is everything that used to be the knower becomes the known.
Yeah.
And then you have to, well, then who's the knower? There's nothing there to be the knower. And then you look at, is there any knower? There's only the known, actually. And so then you end up differentiate the changeless knownness, consciousness, from Maya, from the all of the things, all of the vrittis, all of the experiences that come and go in self-evident consciousness, which is me. The me, so that just so that you don't get too intellectual about it, when the your own self experience as me is exactly what we're talking about, is self-evident consciousness.
Yeah.
Sometimes these words get too academic or intellectual. I'm self-evident consciousness. I'm just me. And I have to recognize that this simple me that I am is Brahman. is the simple me of all beings. I think I'm going to send out, hopefully, trying to get myself organized with this list of work that I have. I'm going to send out a letter tomorrow to all of you who are trying to come to the camp. Hopefully I've got everybody kind of organized here. But what we'll be sending, what Uma needs, and this will be written up in the letter, is for those of you who have any health conditions, need certain types of food, certain things you definitely cannot eat, we need to start getting all that information, you know, collating all that information soon, so that when we go shopping, we take all of this into account, so that there's always something for everybody to eat. You wouldn't believe how many special conditions there are that we all have to take care of. So it's good to get that list now. Let me see what this says. Oh, just send me a note, how I can do that. I know there's people who are willing to do all of this. I haven't been able to organize it on my own end to put that together, but I'd be happy to send it to you. If you just send me an email, I'll do that.
What did he ask for?
Just a copy of this particular class. Okay, everybody, shall we call it a night? Hi, Liz, okay. Do the same for me then. If anybody liked this class, needs a copy of it, I'll put one on Dropbox and send you the link. Night, everybody. So nice to see everybody. So nice to see your names. But I don't just see your names. I feel like you're here. So that's a nice thing. Night, Anne. Night, Nella. Night, Michael. Night, Malika. Okay, out the door. See you.
Good night, Rhonda.
Good night, Edward.
Thank you for waking me up, miss. I faded out once or twice.